Before travel ball and summer AAU competition, Rhonda Muller Johnson grew up in Eastern North Carolina, developing her athletic skills the old-fashioned way, playing with and against her seven siblings and neighborhood friends. The daughter of a Marine Corps veteran and a mother who played on the best AAU women's basketball teams in the country, Rhonda grew to love basketball and softball. She attended the Campbell Basketball School, fell in love with Buies Creek, and has never lost touch with the university. Rhonda enrolled at Campbell in 1978 and was named Outstanding Female Athlete three times before graduating in 1982. She then accepted a position as assistant basketball and head softball coach at her alma mater. The first female inducted into Campbell's Athletics Hall of Fame, Rhonda taught and coached for three decades in Johnston County schools before returning to Campbell as an adjunct instructor in the exercise science program. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with people who have made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Campbell Hall of Fame member Rhonda Muller Johnson. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Rhonda, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you, Stan, for having me. It's an honor.
Rhonda, let's just start out at the beginning. Tell us what it was like growing up in Eastern North Carolina and how you got started playing sports.
Well, Stan, I come from a very small town. I can remember when I came to Buies Creek. That's one of the reasons it felt like it was home to me, because I came from such a small town, Sneed's Ferry. And I can remember introducing, when people would ask me where I was from, I would say, oh, I'm from Topsail, or it's close to Wilmington, and because no one knew where it was. And now so many people know where it is. It's so much larger now than it was. But we played anything and everything in the yard as we grew up. We did not have a lot of the things that kids have now. And that was our entertainment. We didn't have video games or phones or anything like that. We entertained by hanging out in the yard, and we had a yard that was large enough that everyone came and played with us, you know. So it was the place to be if you wanted to play football or kickball or softball or even basketball. You know, my dad, we had a backyard that was full of pine trees, and there was one little area that had two trees and a little bit of dirt. There was some dirt in between the two, and he put some board up, you know, you just cut some big squares of board and put us a rim, and everybody would come over, and he put a spotlight in the backyard. So we played any time of the day or night, you know, as long as we were home, because he had a strict policy about when the street light came on, it was time to be at home. So we spent a lot of time in the yard playing.
Holy cow. Tell me a little bit about your parents and what it was like growing up in a family of all 10 of you.
Wow. My mother and father were both very hard workers. My father was a veteran, a disabled, retired veteran who was injured in his services. And my mother worked 7 days a week for as long until she had to retire and look after my father, because he had had a stroke in his 60s. And so she, you know, he was still quite, he was still able to be at home, and he was, you know, he didn't lose his speech or anything like that, but he was not able to work anymore. And then, you know, Mom just decided at a certain point that she was going to stay home with him. We, you know, there were 13 years between my oldest sister and my youngest sister. There were four boys and four girls. And so there was always an older sibling. The oldest was always responsible, you know, for making sure that dinner was ready when Mom and Dad got home from work. And a lot of times I was not at home when, you know, when I got to middle school, that's when I started playing organized ball. We had middle school teams, but we didn't have league teams or anything like that. So I was usually at the school, and Mom and Dad would, you know, we would get to school all together, but then Mom and Dad would pick me up on the way home from work. But the oldest sibling was always responsible for having dinner ready when Mom and Dad got home. And like on the weekends, you know, once I got to that age, once I got to middle school and I started playing, I probably started playing travel softball when I was about 13 or 14. And back then, we didn't have eight and under or 10 and under. We all played together. So I was 14 years old playing with 25-year-old women, you know. So, and my best friend was about 10 years older than I was, my best friend on the team. And we always traveled together. And my father was my biggest fan as far as softball. I mean, he was there. If it was drivable, he was there. And my mom was not able to. My mom worked on the weekends, mm-hmm. so she didn't get to go, but she did watch me play basketball at the school. And I can remember they were, you know, it means a lot. The older you get, the more your parents, the more you realize what they did for you. And when I was playing at Campbell, I can remember loving, you know, for my parents to come watch me play. I didn't, you know, I knew it was a good drive, but I didn't think about, you know, what they were sacrificing. So they would get off of work, and they both worked in Jacksonville, and they would drive together to come watch us play on a weeknight. They would drive up here and watch me play and then turn around and go back and get up and go back to work the next morning. And it was probably about a 2.5-hour drive. So that's one of the things that stands out to me, you know, about my parents with their support. They made sure that, you know, I was always able to, I always had what I needed to play and that I had transportation there or whatever, you know, because I didn't have a car, you know, I didn't have a car till I was probably 22 years old. But back then, you know, you just rode with whoever had one, you know. But we all kind of looked after each other, you know, growing up. I can remember, this is another thing that stands out in my mind about my mother. She would wait tables on the weekend, and she would come in on Sunday night after she had worked, and she'd take that apron off, and she'd divvy up all her money on the table between all eight of us for our lunch money that week, you know, because we wanted to eat like everybody else. We didn't want to carry our lunch. Well, now I'm quite excited to bring my own lunch when I come to work.
Absolutely. Rhonda, your father, Marine Corps veteran, served, saw combat both in World War II and Korea.
Yes.
And your mother, I'm well aware of the history of the Haynes Hosiery women's basketball program and how incredible that was. But tell us a little bit about, some of our listeners may not be aware of what that was back in the middle of the last century and how incredible that was. And, you know, and obviously you got some of your talent from her. Did she able to show you some stuff as well?
Well, I do remember my mother during my high school basketball games. You know, we'd talk about it all the way home, and when we got home, and I don't understand why they don't do this and they need to run that. And she had a basketball mind, and Dean Smith was her. She loved Dean Smith. But yeah, Mom played. The story with Mom and Dad was he was a Marine. We talked about that. And he was stationed at Camp Lejeune, which is across the river from Sneed's Ferry. And it was a nice little walk from where he had to go to get to the restaurant where my mother was waiting tables. And she was young. And but he would walk over and go eat at the restaurant, the Riverview, mm-hmm. if anyone knows Sneed's Ferry. She worked there, and my grandmother worked there. My grandmother worked in the kitchen as a cook, and my mother waited tables. So that's how they met. And when Daddy, you know, they got married in between the wars. And if my mind serves me right, which sometimes it doesn't, but it was early 50s, probably 50, 51, 52, in that time period when Mom was playing ball. And they got married, and then Dad was deployed again to Korea. And that's when Mom went and was playing for Haynes Hosiery. And those are the 3 years. They won several national championships, and she was in that time period with them. And I can remember going back for the reunion with her that the Hosiery team had, and saw all the women older in their 60s and 70s that had played ball with Mom. It was so cool to get to meet all of those ladies from a national. I mean, they were a powerhouse back then. I guess it was as high as you could get because they didn't have professional.
sounds kind of reminiscent of the scene in the All-American Girls Baseball League, you know, a league of their own.
Yes.
When they all gather for at the Baseball Hall of Fame for the exhibit, and all the former players have their families and friends with them and all that, and having a reunion, something like that.
Yes. When I was watching that movie, it made me think of that reunion that they had, and I get really excited to have reunions when we had the Wanda Watkins Day, and all of her players and all the people that loved her, and that so many people that she had touched. And as a coach, that, you know, you just, they become your children, you know. And as a player, they're your lifelong friends, you know. I think back to when I came, I mean, the friendships that I made here in Buies Creek are still, I mean, we just lost one of our best, you know, recently. But I think back to the friendships that I made in this place, and it was truly my home away from home. Mm-hmm. I have lifelong friendships that I still cherish and get together with, lifelong friends. Well, Mary and Wanda, for one, mm-hmm. We see each other all the time now since I've come back to the creek.
Rhonda, besides school and sports growing up, what else did you do in your youth? Have any interesting jobs that you'd like to share with us?
Well, during the summer, on the weekends, I did not work because I was on a ball field. Mm-hmm. I was always gone. But when we wanted, you know, when I was growing up, you didn't get allowances, or you didn't get paid to make your bed or do your laundry. It was an expectation. So as far as extra money, if we wanted extra money to do anything or go anywhere, we would, my grandfather was a fisherman. These were my parents, my mom's parents, because my dad was from New York, so I did not know them. They passed early. But anyway, my grandmother, I can't even remember how old she was when she quit tying that skiff, that little boat, to her waist with a rope and crawling along that river. And all you could see was her chin up where she was digging clams. And we'd go out there with her and dig clams, and then we'd go sell them. And that was our money. Or we would, they would hire us to go down to the fish house when the shrimp trawlers came in, and we would head shrimp for them to do that. Babysitting. But the clamming and the hidden shrimp are two of the most common things I did.
No one who eats at a seafood restaurant, I won't say no one, a lot of people who eat at a seafood restaurant and order grilled shrimp don't understand the process of taking the head off and cleaning it and pulling it and just leaving the tail on, maybe, and all this.
Evaning.
Absolutely. Would you call that the job that you knew you didn't want to have later on in life?
I can tell you the one I didn't want to do again. I worked on a shrimp trawler one summer with a friend of mine, and I don't think I did it but two or three times. I don't think I went out but two or three times. That was not fun work to me. It is work, and you have to do it at different hours. You know, it's not like you can lay out in the sun while you're doing it. It's work. And I have many friends that I grew up with that do that now. That's what they do for a living, and it is difficult work.
And it's based on the tides, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And so it can be 4 a.m.?
Right.
A.m.
Exactly. Right.
Excellent. Coach Watkins, when I interviewed her, she mentioned her first job working in agriculture was picking cotton, and you got paid by the pound, and she says, and cotton doesn't weigh much.
No.
What do you think jobs like that, Rhonda, working in agriculture or the industry that you did, how does that help develop you for later in life?
Oh, it teaches you work ethic, for one. I mean, to appreciate so much more. I mean, things were not easy then. I mean, that's the difference in then and now. Everything that you did then, you worked for. It wasn't like given to you or cooked by someone else or a microwave, or, you know, you think about all the cell phone and the technology that we have now. It's crazy. just everything. Everything was work, but it teaches you to respect hard work. It teaches you, my father, I'm going to go back to this because when I talk to my sisters now, I'm like, I don't understand people that just won't go to work or won't do this or they won't do that. And she says, you know, that's all we ever knew. What we knew when we were coming up was you work. And if you're sick or you hurt a little bit, you still work, you know. And when I was coaching and teaching, when I got ready to retire, they were like, Ronnie, you're going to need to take some of these days or you're not going to get paid for them. Because I would go to work no matter how bad I felt because that was what I was taught, you know, suck it up, buttercup, you know, or walk it off. Or same when you were playing, you had to be tough. It was tough. You had to be tough. And in my earlier years of coaching after my first husband left and being a single parent for, you know, all those years, I didn't want to take any days off because I wanted to save those days in case she got sick, you know. And so that was another reason. But we just have a strong work ethic. And I don't know that that is as common in our society. I don't know if that's a kind thing to say, but I think people from back then know what real work is. I can't imagine picking cotton like Wanda had to do. I have friends that living in Johnston County that they talk about tobacco all the time and growing tobacco and picking and suckering. And I was like, well, I wouldn't even want to be out there in the field because if I saw a snake, I'd be done. And they'd say, oh, you never know when you're going to pick a leaf of tobacco up and something's going to be crawling under it. And I'm like, uh-uh, nope. But see, knowing what I know now and seeing what I see in the waters from above now, I'm not so sure I'd want to get in the river and clam now. I'd say, I'll take a rake. I'll do it that way. I don't want to get down there that close.
Perspective lays everything, right?
Yes, it does.
Rhonda, tell us a little bit about what drew you to Campbell and Buies Creek. What was your first experience coming here?
Well, my first experience was when I came to camp. I had the opportunity to come to camp one summer, and I just fell in love with it. Again, Campbell is not the same campus it was back then, but it still has the same type of people, and that is what drew me. I had the opportunity to go to other colleges that were, you know, I was being recruited by other schools. And I can remember going to North Carolina State and walking around. And, you know, I was from a town where everybody knew everybody. So I was like, hey, how you doing? And I told Mama, I said, I don't like this place. And she was like, why? I said, well, every time I speak to somebody, they look at me like I've got two heads. This is not for me. And then East Carolina, you know, but I wanted to play both sports. I loved basketball and softball, and they all just wanted me for one. So that was another reason I could come here, be comfortable, be able to play two sports, and I just fell in love with it. And still to this day, it's my home away from home. But that's what drew me here was basically the people.
So I've got to ask this question. Were you a basketball player who played softball or a softball player who happened to play basketball?
People ask me that all the time. I think I will be honest with you. I loved whatever season it was. That's what I loved. My junior and senior year, I played volleyball as well and ran track and anything else. We didn't have a lot, but what we had, I did it. And just because I love sports, period. But I think that softball may come more naturally to me. And I don't know if that's because I started playing it so much younger and traveling and playing with the big, older, big teams that had older women. And you had to play up. And I think that one just came more natural to me. But I loved them both.
Rhonda, when you attended and then later worked as a counselor and a coach at the Campbell Basketball School, you learned from some of the greats of the game.
Oh, gosh.
Tell us a little bit about some of the people you met along the way that were associated with the basketball school.
Well, back then, there were many head coaches that would come. I can remember Sylvia Hatchell, Pat Head Summit, some of the men like Lefty Drizzell, Kay Yao came and spoke. There were some that came and spoke, and then there were some that came and taught. And as a player, I was teaching stations, and they would come in and kind of head up what we were trying to do, because we, you know, back then we were using 6-7 gyms and bussing out to different gyms everywhere in Harnett County and Triton, Western Harnett and Harnett Central and Bowie's Creek and South Johnston we even used. We had so many campers that we were having to bus out, but those people, as well as the other players that I looked up to, I mean, players on my team I looked up to, from the moment I walked in, Wanda was one of the people that I looked up to a lot.
That begs a question. Your freshman year, Wanda's a senior.
Yes.
The next 2 years, she's an assistant coach on the team. And then by the time you're a senior, she's the head coach. You looked up to her as a freshman. How did that dynamic change? How did, you know, and that's a question I asked her. And she, of course, as Wanda, the way she does, she deflects all the praise to the players were so great to work with. But how was that like going from that? That is almost unheard of.
I can say that was Wanda. I mean, that transition was all, you know, because we were, her nickname, has she told you what her nickname was then?
No, but I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Oh, Wanda, I'm sorry. Her nickname was Fat.
And okay.
Probably because she was so tiny.
Right.
You know, and her nickname was Fat when I came in. And one of the hardest things in my sophomore year was to stop calling her Fat, you know, or Fats. And it was, you know, you had to go from your teammate to she's the coach now. And she rolled right with it. She's so professional. She, you know how she is now. She's always been that way. She just rolled right into that coaching position, and she knew her responsibility, and she drew that line. But then we were still, she respected us as players, and we respected her as our coach. And it just transitioned. It was an easy transition. Other than the fact that you wanted to, you know, you kind of wanted to buddy up and come on now, coach, yeah. You know, because she had been your, but she was always so professional, but she made it easy for us to make that transition.
All-state player in softball, more than 1,200 points and 900 rebounds. Your teams while you were playing were finished with a 61-39 record, so two times out of every three, y'all won, at least. When you graduated, you had the opportunity to move into the coaching career.
Right.
How did Wanda help you make that transition, or had you already seen it the last couple of years by watching?
I had, just by, even when she was our assistant coach, there was that line of professionalism. That you are the player and I am your coach now. I'm not your buddy, although you could go to her for anything, and still to this day, she would do anything for any of us, whether we were her teammates, her players, her assistant coach, whatever. She would do anything for any of us. So making that transition, that's where I credit Wanda, Betty Jo, and then Wanda, I credit them so much for the success that I was able to have as a coach, because they taught me so much, not just about the game, but about your players, how to treat your players, how to teach them life skills,
not just, it's not just, it's not all about the game. It's the classroom. It's respect. It's punctuality. It's determination and perseverance through hard times. Toughness. I mean, all of those things wrapped into your character. Everything about their coaching philosophy taught me to be the coach that I was.
You mentioned Betty Jo Cleary, also a member of the Campbell Hall of Fame. Tell us a little bit about Betty Jo. Some of our newer or younger listeners may not know Coach Cleary and the impact she's had on women's sports in this state and beyond.
BJ was, she was tough, but she had tough love. I can remember, I'm going to tell you a story about punctuality. This was my sophomore year, I think. I thought it was my freshman year, but Wanda was an assistant this year, so I think it was my sophomore year. And really and truly, it was in all innocence. We had a curfew, you know, because we had a game the next day, and our curfew was at 11 o'clock. So some of us had gone to a movie in Dunn. I think it was in Dunn. And as I said, I didn't have a car, so I was riding with someone else. And we were on our way back, and then just all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, y'all, you got to hurry up. We've got a curfew. I'm going to be late. And so they pulled up, and it was probably, I don't know, 11:02, something like that. And I lived in Day Dorm, which is right there beside where Marsh Banks. Well, it was, and I was on, I don't know if I was the second floor or third, but I was taking those stairs three at the time trying to get to my room. And guess whose room they checked first that night? I was going up, and they were coming down. And I said, and it was like, no excuses, you know. So I was like, oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness. So we get to practice the next day. And Betty Jo, anybody that knew BJ Cleary knew that she had the look. She had a look that you did not want looking at you when she was disappointed or upset with you. And when I went to practice that next day, I was like, oh, it's coming. So for about, I don't know, it seemed like a lot longer, but it was probably a few days that I got the cold shoulder. And I'm big, and I would say that physically I have always prided myself in trying to be tough as far as physical ailments, you know, being tough if you get hurt or whatever. But emotionally, I am a pansy. And Wanda teases me. Wanda and Betty Jo to this day will tease me and say, well, we didn't have to do anything when you messed up, but look at you, and you'd start crying. And it was the truth. So for about the next game that we played, I didn't start. And I was, you know, I was on the bench and I was cheering and doing my thing, although my feelings were just torn all to pieces. And at the beginning of the second half, she came down that bench, walking, her arms crossed, looked over there at me, Miss Muller, do you think you have learned your, I don't think she even finished the question. I said, I'm ready, Coach. I've learned. I'm ready to go in. And I was up in no time, but that, I said, never again. And that was the only time I ever missed curfew. And so when I started coaching and trying to teach those girls about punctuality, they were like, what does it, it was only one. I said, no, it does not matter. It does not matter if it's 30 seconds, if it's 10 seconds, you were late. So those were one of the punctuality stories that I've always told to keep people honest about being on time. And my father was like that too. You were not late.
Well, the Marine Corps wakes for no one anyways, right?
Exactly. When we were getting ready for school in the morning, my father never had to. He would step in your bedroom, flip your light on and say, time to get up. And we knew it was on if you didn't. So we were up. It amazes me when I think back how many times or how in the world we all got ready for school in the morning with one bathroom in the house with 10 people. Because he would get up early and he would have his hair just right. And, you know, my dad was all Marine. I mean, his nails were always done. His hair was always, his T-shirts were ironed. And he was ready before he got us up. And he was in the kitchen cooking while we were getting ready before we went to school.
Rhonda, share a memory or two, if you will, from your time on campus here as a student, both on and off the floor or on and off the softball field. Do you have any favorite stories or go-tos that you like to share?
Well, some of the things that stick out in my mind, and I tell my class this when I'm teaching wellness and we're talking about nutrition, we start talking about all the obstacles that they face with selection of food that we have on campus. And I try to tell them, guys, you don't understand. I said, when I was here, I said, I'm going to tell you another when I was here story, okay? I said, we played in Carter Gym and Marsh Banks was where we ate. And when we got out of the gym and it was time for dinner, we had practice right up until time. We had just enough time to sprint to the cafeteria and get our supper. We got what was left, and we got what was on the line. And you guys have a food court. You have Moe's. You've got Chick-fil-A. You've got Starbucks. You've got Subway. I said, y'all are spoiled. And they just look at me.
They don't know what the Tuesday night fried chicken or Thursday night roast beef, and you got two vegetables to go with
it. Exactly, and that was it.
And you didn't get second.
You didn't have a salad bar. You didn't have an ice cream bar. You didn't, you know, you got what was on the line. So I talk to them all the time about our trips and how we raced from practice across campus to get to the cafeteria. But, oh my gosh, stories about playing here. Huh. The punctuality one was one that sticks out in my brain. And of course the cafeteria. That's one of the things that make you as close is the things that you go through when you're on a team together like that. You go through the sprinting to the cafeteria and people getting injured. And I can remember as a player, my senior year, and I can't remember where we were at, but it was at a tournament, and I had not missed a game due to an injury or anything else. And if you jammed a finger, they taped it. If you rolled your ankle, they taped it. You just sucked it up, and you got back out there, and you wanted to be out there, you know. And then my senior year, we were at a tournament, and I had been having some problems with my back. And I just kept trying. I kept pushing up and down the court. And they called a timeout, I think, and the trainer came over there, and he was like, she's done. And I'm like, no buts, you're done. And so the next night, we were still at this place, and it was the only game that I was told, don't dress out. So I knew in my heart that there was no chance I was going to get on the court. You know, as long as you had your uniform on, there was still a little chance. But that was a story that I'll never forget because that was the only game that I never got on the floor, you know.
Rhonda, when did you know and what made you interested in pursuing a teaching and coaching career?
Well, I knew when I was in high school, if I ever, you know, once I realized I did not think about college in my earlier years because I knew we couldn't afford for me to go to college, and I was a C student, you know, and I knew there was not a lot of money in women's athletics back then. You just didn't hear of people getting scholarships, and you know, it just didn't happen. And so about the end of my junior year, when people started saying, you know, you could go to college, you know, you could go to college and play ball, and I'm like, Well, then when it started happening, I had a physical education teacher that I just loved. And he, you know, with being involved in sports and everything else and always wanting to be in the gym, I thought, I think I could do this. I think I could be a teacher. And I've always wanted to help people, you know, and do for other people. So my sisters tried to, when I was at Campbell and trying to, I was in graduate school. And I knew that I was going to teach. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to teach and I wanted to coach. I had been surrounded by amazing coaches, you know, while I was here. And people that were also physical education teachers here, you know. So they were that nail in the coffin, as you say, as far as my decision to do what I wanted to do. But my sister, my oldest sister, is a PA. She has her own practice down at Surf City. And my youngest sister is a phlebotomist and does x-ray and does all that. So they work together. And they tried so hard to get me, all you have to do is go back and take a few courses, like just take a few and you could be a physical therapist. And I was like, I can't make people hurt like that, y'all. I just can't. And they're like, you make those girls hurt every day on the court. And I'm like, that's different. That's different. So teaching is just what, you know, they felt like I should do, you know, that. But I always told my players, do not pick something that you're going to do for the rest of your life for the money. I said, you choose to do something that you love. And if you make a great living at it, that's awesome. But don't choose something because, ooh, he makes a lot of money. I think I want to do that. That's not the reason you choose what you want to spend the rest of your life doing. Your career should be something that you love. And I have had many teachers that came, but my last year, I've had, like I told you earlier, I've got two girls that are in law now. I had my last group that graduated. One of those went into law. One is getting her doctorate now in PT. One is in ophthalmology. I mean, they were just, two of them are nurses. You know, they just, I was very blessed when I was a high school coach to have wonderful kids. They were good students. They would do anything for each other. They loved each other. And that was one of the things that I loved about playing here at Campbell. We were a family. And that's what I tried to instill in my players. You know, that these are people that you're going to spend a lot of time with, and you need to love them. You might not like them, but you need to love them, you know? And so those are, I don't know if I strayed off of the topic, but those are some of the reasons. And I've never regretted what I decided to do. I've always loved it.
Attention Camel fans, join the Fighting Camel Club and support our student athletes like never before. Your donations go directly to funding life-changing scholarships, helping our athletes reach their goals on and off the field. As a Fighting Camel Club member, you'll get exclusive perks like limited edition merchandise, early ticket access, and the chance to watch Campbell home games from the exclusive Fighting Camel Club end zone suite at Barker Lane Stadium, or pregame with us at our exclusive hoop room before our basketball games. Don't wait. Head to gocamels.com and click on the Fighting Camel Club button at the top of the page to join today. We make a difference for our students when we do this together. Go Camels!
You touched on the closeness that you had with your teammates. The women's basketball alumni group at Campbell is an incredible bunch. Through the years, obviously, there's a big connection for the 35 years that Wanda was head coach and all that. But what does it make that group so special? Because this is a campus, you know, you go from playing at Carter Gym to playing at, you know, a state-of-the-art facility. And this campus has grown and evolved over the last 40 and 50 years. Amazing. What is the common bond between someone, say, from the class of 82 and some from the class of 22?
The people, the leadership, the love that you have for the school. Wanda, as you said, is a big part of that. And it just trickled down to many of us. And I don't know how many of her graduates became teachers or coaches, but I would just about bet money that if there were any teachers and coaches that came through Wanda's program, that they are teaching and coaching with the same love and leadership and qualities that Wanda and this university instilled in us as players. I still have relationships with the girls that I played with. Now, I've lost touch with some of them due to distance and other things, but social media gives us that opportunity and technology to stay in touch with people. And I truly believe that the love and the life lessons that we are taught through our coaches and the bond that we share as teammates, I think we all have that no matter what year we graduated. We all got a piece of it, and we all know what it was like to be in this program. And we all loved this campus. We loved our coaches. We loved our teammates. So we all have that bond, I think, even though some of the girls I didn't play with, obviously, or I didn't coach. But even like Lisa Rugg, if you remember Lisa.
Of course.
Lisa was my cousin who we adopted, and she played for me, and then she came and played here. And it just, I could see a change in her. And it is just the part of it's growing up. You know, you're coming from high school, and these years are very formidable as far as maturing and growing up. But I keep going back to character and love and the leadership that we had, the positive leadership, but also discipline. You know, we were disciplined, but we were disciplined out of love. My best friend used to say, if she ever said something ugly, she'd say, "Now I say that out of Christian love now." So if she said something about somebody that was doing something they weren't supposed to do, that's what she would say. "Now I'm saying that out of Christian love."
Rhonda, the tremendous growth of the university from the late 70s to the present almost has mirrored, or coincidentally has happened at the same time. Title IX comes through, creates amazing opportunities, far-reaching opportunities for women in sports. Tell me about your first-hand seat to watch that. What has it felt like for you to be able to see that from before you got here, before the 1981 and since then? Tell me about what that means to you.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing to see. I really do not think that the players now realize how good they have it. You know, and I say that in a good Christian loving way. You know, because I think back when we were playing, we had one pair of shoes. We had a travel bag that we had to turn in at the end of the season because they were used the next year. They didn't have your name and number on it. They had Campbell on it, and it was turned in at the end of the season. You know, you had to watch where you wore your shoes. You know, you couldn't wear them anywhere but in the gym because you had to take care of them. We didn't get the warm-ups and the travel gear and all of the course. Of course, a lot of this came in when we became Division I and the funding started coming in. It really has changed so much. I think about the facilities and how amazing this campus has become as far as the development, the aesthetics, again, I'm going to go back to my class when I'm walking with these youngsters and they're coming in, and a lot of them are athletes, and they know, you know, and I say, do y'all get gloves? Do you get bats? I'm like, you see this building, Lundy? We're walking by Lundy. I said, there was a field back here before Lundy was built, and there was a little dirt path, and you walk down that dirt path, and that's where we played softball. It was a field, and we had wooden benches, and we didn't care because we loved it. I mean, we loved the game. We didn't care where we played. We just wanted to play. And we had the fence like you see in Little League, you know, the little nylon-type plastic outfield that just says if it goes over that, it's a home run, you know. It's not like metal or with the, what are they called, the wind protectors or anything like that. It was just a little, the wind probably would blow it down. But when I'm talking to them about the facilities and the softball complex and the Coliseum, funny joke about the Coliseum the first time I saw it, I told Wanda, I said, man, I'd hate to have to run these stairs. Because, you know, in Carter, you know, we thought we had it bad because we'd run up the stairs and then run down and then go up the back. And I said, I can't imagine running these stairs, which they may or may not do. But we, you know, we did a lot of stair running, and I incorporated that into my conditioning whenever I was coaching. But the difference in the funding, meals and travel and all of this that's coming in for women now, it just blew my, when I came into the Coliseum for the first time, I was just, this is gorgeous what it would be like to play in here, you know. But because it was, I mean, I'm not even sure if I was still doing basketball camps when we had the Coliseum, I think, because I did camp for like 30 years.
2008 was the first year that it opened. That fall during volleyball season, it was the 08-09 basketball season, was when the Convocation Center opened. The other question that I always want to ask folks of a certain age, because we're about the same age here, and is that, you know, who are your heroes? Who are your sports heroes growing up? And did you have that female athlete role model that these young ladies now, you know, when I was growing up, I was either going to be Pete Maravich,
right,
in the driveway, or Julius Erving or somebody like that. And you know, now a little girl can look and say, oh, I want to be like Angel Reese. I want to be like Caitlin Clark. I mean,
yeah,
who
was amazing?
Who were your heroes? Yeah,
I was like my mother. I was raised in a house full of Carolina fans. Mm-hmm. Funny story there too. As we have grown older, but you know, I loved Dean Smith, and I, you know, it was back then when Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Darty, you know, players like that. I think about the Carolina team, you know, but then I think about Ralph Sampson, and I think about the men more because that's what we watched in my house. You never saw women's basketball. So I never got to experience people to look up to until I came to college, you know, and when I started playing college ball, you know, and then later, you know, I started recognizing like when Connecticut was so powerful and the Rebecca Lobos and the, you know, and then Wanda, you know, Wanda's, I learned about Gina Beasley, you know, because as a freshman, we've scrimmaged state. Mm-hmm. And that was a treat. You know, back when they had Gina and some other tough players. But as far as when I was growing up, women that I looked up to, that I don't remember any because there were not, it just was not out there like it is until I got older, you know. So I was more or less watching the men. Those were the ones that I liked to watch. So to be able to watch women, especially on TV now, and to be able to watch these women play the difference is just crazy. They don't, again, you know, they don't know what they have.
In these days of where the grass always seems to be greener somewhere else, you chose to remain in the Johnston County schools for 3 decades. What were some of the reasons that made you want to stick around this area?
I can remember, well, when I was in graduate school at Campbell, I met my first husband, and he was from Johnston County. I actually met him through a teammate of mine, Cindy Biggerstaff, Cindy Parker, and Kathy McClam were two of my friends, my closest friends, on the basketball team. We all came in as freshmen together. We were all six-footers. We all came in together. They both were from South Johnston. Mm-hmm. So they were freshmen when Wanda was a senior at South Johnston. Yes. And so that went full circle as well. For me to go back to South Johnston was even crazier, but so when I met him and he was from Johnston County, that's what brought me to Johnston County. I married into that county and, became a teacher, of course. And then, when he left, my daughter was 8 years old, and all she had ever known, we remained very close with his family. We were in a church that we were happy in. I was happy with my job. And although there were people from my hometown trying to get me to come back and coach down there and go, I just did not want to, I didn't want to do it to my daughter. I didn't want to tear her away from her friends, my friends, our church, her school, my job. We were both very happy there, so we chose to stay. Or I chose, because she was 8. She didn't get a choice. But she was the biggest reason that I stayed. But I was very happy there.
Rhonda, you coached for, decades. What advice would you give a youth player, or did you give your players who were trying to play college sports?
Well, I have another story about that. And I use this as well in my class when we're talking about physical skills of agility and strength and endurance and things like that. I had a player on my last team. They graduated the same year I retired, and she ended up going to Charleston, to Georgia. It just left me. They were in our conference.
College of Charleston, Charleston Southern?
Charleston Southern.
Yes.
Good gracious. Anna Webster was her name, or is her name, and she wanted to play Division I. Her dream was to play at the Division I level in basketball, and she worked hard. I mean, she was good. She still is, but she was good in high school. She was one of the best players that I had the opportunity to coach. Good student, shot the eyes out of the ball, good ball handling skills, was a good player, but did not quite have the foot speed to be at D1 level. So my assistant that year was an All-American trackster from UNCW, Anna Rainer Marbury, and she was my assistant, and she was a trainer at the time. So Anna Webster would come in before school, and for the whole summer before her senior year and half of her junior year and her whole summer before her senior year, she was training. They were, even when we got back to school, she would come before school, medicine balls, weight room, ladders, jump rope, pulling the sled, pushing the sled, shooting machine. She did everything that it took to become a Division I basketball player, and she was able to go and play. Bless her heart, she got injured her first year there, but she redshirted. She graduated from there, and she's in PT. She's getting her doctorate in PT now. So she's done very well, but it took a lot of work. And I tried to tell my players, if you want to be good, you have to work. You can't get this quick, like, you can't Google it. You can't, this is not the quick. If you want to play at your top level and you want to be your best, you have to put in the hours. You have to put in the work, whether it's shooting or whether it's whatever your weakness is. You have to be, the whole thing. But the number one thing they had to know was that they had to be good students as well. They had to be good student athletes. They couldn't just work on the game and not work in the classroom.
Rhonda, you will soon be inducted into the USSA Hall of Fame after earning multiple All-State and All-American honors in softball. What made you want to continue to compete after you've moved on into teaching, coaching, and later even as a role as a parent?
I just loved it. I loved it, and I was blessed to have a supportive family. Again, my father would take me everywhere, but once I was old enough, like when I finished at camp, even when I was here, I was playing during the summer. I can remember when I had my daughter. I had her on April the 30th, and I had a C-section. And by the end of June, I was back on a ball field, taking that baby everywhere, feeding her in between ball games, head first slide, go in the bathroom, get all cleaned up, pass her to her daddy and get right back on the field. I just loved it. I think back now and wonder, was I crazy, you know? But I just wanted to play because I loved it. And I got to a point when my back had started bothering me, and I would still, you know, again, suck it up, buttercup. I'd keep playing because I just loved it that much. But when I got to the point that I couldn't run the bases without hurting, I knew it was time. And just a few years after Olivia was born, I decided to stop the travel and being gone every weekend and staying in hotels and having to drag her everywhere. And I just started playing local leagues where we could just go to Raleigh and play, or Smithfield, or, you know, local teams and church league teams and co-ed teams. So I kept playing until I was, you know, I'm not even sure what year I quit playing, but I think I was close to 50, 45, 50. I played it for the love.
In 1993, you were the first female to be inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. You're also a member of the Jacksonville Onslow County Sports Hall of Fame, in addition to your soon induction into the Softball Hall of Fame. Rhonda, from somebody that grew up playing in the yard and in the backyard, what do these honors mean to you?
Well, they're very humbling. They're very special. And it makes you proud of what you have accomplished, but then it also humbles me because I've always been surrounded by teammates, coaches, people, parents, family. I've always had people around me that were helping me, were encouraging me, were lifting me up, making me better. I was just blessed to be, I was very blessed to be able to do something that I loved and basically be rewarded for it. And all I wanted to do was play. I mean, I can remember my father, when I was younger, he would park the car in the front yard and he would set all of my trophies on the car, and then he would make me put my uniform on. I say make me, you know, ask me, put my uniform on, and he'd put all of my equipment, and he'd make me hold the ball up and spin it and have the bat and the glove over here, and he would take pictures, and I was like, Daddy, he was so proud. And I was just like, I don't want to do this. Please don't make me do this. But he was the proudest, and I know my mother was too. I mean, they were just so proud of me, but I just, again, they were there for me. They gave me what I needed to do what I wanted and what I loved doing. And God just gave me the opportunities and the gift I get. I mean, it was genetic. I mean, both of them were athletes, very involved in sports. And I just, fortunately, by playing so much and that being what we did for entertainment, I may not have had to work as hard as some of these other kids who had other things distracting them from it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I got better by playing, and I played with the boys. I played with who was older than me. I played with women that were older than me. And again, keep going back to the love, but it was just an opportunity that was given to me. And by that, I mean this. I have another story. I can remember my mother telling me this. I didn't know this when I was young and I was a player. But I knew, and I never, you know, when you're young, you take so much for granted. I didn't think about how much a glove cost or a new pair of tennis shoes cost or anything like that. But the years that I was a first baseman and I was playing for Great Gas, and we traveled, and we went all over the country. I tell people all the time I got to travel and go to so many states, but I didn't get to see much of anything in that state but the field. But I can remember my mother told me, she said, your daddy used to fuss whenever I would want to spend money at Christmas. And I'd tell him, I don't care if it takes me a year to pay this off. My children are going to have Christmas. I kind of got that gene, I think. But then my dad would go out. She said he went out and came home with this glove. And I looked at him and I said, I cannot believe that you paid this for a leather glove, a piece of the leather. And she said, he looked at me and said, she needed a new glove and she was going to have a new glove. So when they would tell me these stories about it, it makes you so grateful and so humbled to know that they gave everything.
They would do without so we could have.
Rhonda, just over a year ago, you were among the hundreds of teammates, players, coaches, alumni, family, and friends when Wanda Watkins Court was dedicated at Gore Arena. Dedicated to your former teammate and coach. In your opinion, what has Wanda Watkins meant to this university and to women's athletics in general?
How much time do we have? I cannot begin to put into words what Wanda means to so many. I told you I was emotional. I'm sorry. From the time I met her, from the time I stepped on this campus, I looked up to her. As a teammate, as a coach, and watching the positive, loving impact that she has had on so many countless young women's lives. And again, I go back to what Wanda did as a coach was not just teach basketball. She did so much more for you. When I say she treated you like you were her child, I mean, she was like a mother. She was that. She was the strength. She was the academic. You were going to be successful in the classroom. You were going to be successful on the court. You were going to be successful in life. And she gave us all the tools. And not just me, but all of her players had opportunity to have everything they needed to be successful in life from Wanda Watkins, from her leadership, from the person that she was, from the coach that she was, from the leader that she was and still is. There was no one any more deserving to have a court named after them on this campus but them Wanda Watkins.
Finally, Rhonda, can you put into words how Campbell University and the Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
They've definitely... coming to Buies Creek was the best decision I ever made as a student athlete. I remember I told you I was from a small town and playing in Carter and having that hometown that, you know, we were laughed at and we were mocked. You know, is this where we're playing? You know, yep, it sure is. And we've got the home court advantage because we had people right behind us. When my parents came to see me play, I'd be warming up on that basket at the front door and they'd come walking in. Feelings like that make you so thankful and appreciative for this small family community type campus. It made me, I learned lessons here again from my coaches, from my professors. I can remember seeing professors that I had in class come to watch us, and they would be in that gym watching us play. That's a special feeling, you know, when you know that you're not just a number sitting in the classroom, that they appreciate who you are as a student and an athlete and a person. And that was the atmosphere here. But as far as life lessons, I grew up here, you know. I learned a lot. And it, again, not just about sports, but about life. You know, I didn't even date when I was in high school, you know, except to go to the prom or something, because I was everybody's buddy. So, you know, as far as even social, you know, making the friends that I have, that I still have to this day, you know, which is a long time ago. It's just a special place. And if it were not that special to me, I probably would not have come back 10 years. Well, has it been? I think this is my 10th year back as an adjunct. And that story, you know, it was Mary and Wanda, the year I decided to retire, I was just tired. You know, I had coached two sports, you know, and taught. And for 30 years, I was just tired. I was ready for a break. But I wasn't ready to stop, you know what I mean? And then I found out Mary and Wanda, they called me one night and said, let's go out to eat. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And halfway through dinner, Mary just looked at me and said, I have a proposition for you. And I didn't even think twice. I was like, sure, I'll do it. I'll come. And absolutely love it. I mean, it feels like I never left. You know, it's that type of place. You come back and you're working with people that you played ball with and that you coached and that you played summer ball. Dr. Woolard, and she knew me from summer softball, you know. And then Jenny came back, and Jenny and I had been roommates, you know, at one point at Campbell. So I'm teaching, and I still walk around campus, and I can remember David McGirt, the first time I saw him after I came back. I was like, are you still here? And there were just, it just felt like I had never left, except for the aesthetics, of course, you know, because the campus is so, it looks different. But as far as the people, they've never changed. They're still the same good quality, loving people that were here when I was here.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Rhonda Muller Johnson. Thank you, Rhonda, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thank you, Stan, for having me.